There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today. Welcome to Super Athlete Radio. Really excited to bring back Joe DeSena on the show for a second time. Joe, how are you?
Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming, by the way.
Yeah, great to see you. Yeah, we were coming up here for an event tonight, so I figured I'd reach out to you, and you're always so accommodating, so appreciate you so much.
We'll have some fun, and you met Waffles.
We met Waffles, and Waffles, you said, should be the first topic here.
So Waffles is a American Staffordshire Terrier. He's probably, what would you say, 50 pounds?
50 pounds.
I was
a good-looking 50 pounds.
Good-looking 50 pounds, probably a year old. I was introduced to Waffles last night. I've been looking for a blue Amstaff, a gray, you know, beautiful Amstaff, very hard to get. And a friend of mine said, look, there's a tan and white that they're going to put to sleep unless somebody rescues them. And I saw the picture and I thought, man, if I tell my wife I'm dead, she's not going to go for it. He is nice. Let's roll the dice. And he showed up last night, and we hung out. I got a little crate for him. I stayed up late, knocked out 3 or 4 miles with him, figured I'd get him tired. And, you know, it's like you can't judge a book by its cover. He's pretty damn docile. He's pretty nice. He looks scary.
Yeah, not too scary. Right? I mean, pit bulls can get pretty wild.
but he seems pretty relaxed. I don't know if somebody gave him tranquilizers before I got him, but he is relaxed.
Okay.
Yeah. Told my wife, I said, listen, you guys tell me what you think of this. I said, there's a lot of guys that run businesses like we're running. A lot of pressure, 45 countries, shit that, you know, you lose your best employees when you think they're rock solid. You lose your customers when you think you've got them. A factory burns down, T-shirts don't show up on time. And a lot of guys will deal with that with some kind of drugs, alcohol, going to play golf with the buddies, drinking too much at the bar. I said, I don't do any of that. I just like dogs. That's like my thing. I like dogs. So I made a good argument. But we're not over the line.
I think it's pretty valid. What do you think about that?
What I want to know is about, in terms of wanting to go, when like T-shirts aren't showing up on time or, you know, because you talk in chapter or rule 6 of the book about emotional like regularity in kids.
Yeah.
I think a lot of adults need that. Even, you know, personal experience with like, I'm like volatile on the inside, but very calm on the outside.
Yeah.
But you have like, what's the key points when, you know?
Yeah, when shit's falling apart. I mean, look, just knocking out some burpees or sweating a little bit or breathing helps. When you're in a car and somebody cuts you off and you're wild, you're going crazy on the inside. In the past, on the planet, we would run. That would be a lion. That would be something we faced, and we had a physical response to it. We don't always have the ability to have a physical response anymore, and that's probably why you see all these crazy comments on social media, right? Somebody's pissed off about something. They're taking it out in that forum, and really what they need is a run or some burpees or a dog. That's what they need. They don't need a drink. They don't need to go crazy on social media, right? They don't need to overeat.
You channel the energy.
They need to channel the energy in a healthy place where you can calm your central nervous system down. And, you know, it could be a walk, by the way, with a dog. I'm selling here, by the way,
in case my wife listens
to this.
Yeah. And in kids, there's, they mostly talk about it in post-traumatic stress disorder. But there's, most of us think of like fight or flight. Or freeze even. There's something called fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Mm. So some people might be like the court gesture, like make a joke out of it. Some people like go to like a fight response. Have you noticed that in your own like personal life?
What's
my response when shit's... I don't flip out. I don't fight. I think I'm desensitized. Like, there's been so many things that have gone wrong for the last 40 years of doing business. You ever see the movie Ray Donovan? You guys ever watch Ray Donovan, that TV show?
No, it's a TV show.
It's Liv Schreiber. He's in L.A., and he's a fixer. And every day, every scene of the movie, every episode, there's shit happening. The wheels fall off the bus. Everything's going wrong. And he's just always calm, and he's got to go deal with it, whether it's with a baseball bat or going to talk to somebody. And I just feel for 40 years, like, I get those phone calls all day, every day. I get those emails. I get those texts that this went wrong, that way. And eventually you become numb to it, but inside does pay a price, and waffles could make me get through it. Yeah. Like waffles is my, not eating waffles, but hanging out with the dog Waffles.
I think that's legit.
Do you see that with the kids in terms of like those primal human instincts, and then how do you parent them through like their emotions?
I'm trying to think if our children flip out.
It doesn't have to be flipping out. It could be freezing, where they could be kind of running away and hiding under a bed.
I had their brains tested recently. There's a buddy of mine over here who owns a company called Nestry. You guys could have him on the podcast, Tommy. And he can take a look at the brain the same way we could look at a bicep or a thigh or whatever. And one of our children has this ability to just deal with anything coming at them.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna disclose who it is.
Sure.
The other two. But that's probably a skill that I have.
Yeah.
It's that ability to just deal with anything. In other words, I'm not even seeking an outcome. I'm waiting for the world to tell me what's coming today, and then I'm navigating it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what's the company again? It's Nest.
Nestry. Nestry.
I will check that out, because Daniel Amen has been known for like brain scans for the last 10 years. I haven't heard anybody outside of him.
Oh, so. He does some really cool stuff, and it's just all you got to do is put a cap on, and he checks the currents in your brain, and you see it up on the screen. He's like, oh, I know, I've seen this pattern before. I bet you do this. And you're like, yeah, that's what I do. And then he's got an app where you could train the brain.
Can you tell us one of the patterns?
Well, so my pattern, he literally looked at my brain and he's like, do you have an Oxycontin addiction? And I'm like, I've never taken a drug in my life. He's like, man, you are like all over the place. Your brain is chasing something all the time. And I'm definitely a squirrel in that regard.
A lot of business owners are entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems like the last couple of years, there's been, along with Spartan, your brand has become much more focused on kids. Mm. Why do you wrote your most recent book. Why do you feel like that is?
I mean, I love kids. If I had my way, you know, we should have had more children. We have four kids. We should have had 40.
Elon Musk mentality.
I love kids. I love helping them. I love helping them see what their potential is, maximizing their potential. And the great thing about kids is, you know, if I put them on the farm and we do a death camp or death race, I get a higher finisher rate with the kids than I do with the adults.
Mm.
And the adults are more fit and they're more trained. They know what the hell they're doing, but they have car keys. They have wallets. They can leave. They have a plan B. Kids have no way out. They got to get it done. So they do.
Yeah. So there's a study. I don't know if you've heard about it now, but 77% of kids. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Obese.
Not only are they obese, they are more likely to face mental and physical health problems. 77% of them can't even make it into the military because they're so unfit physically and mentally. So, I mean,
it's ugly. It's an ugly situation. And by the way, this should not be shocking. If we feed them shitty food and they don't move around and we're not holding them accountable because everybody's getting a trophy, this is what you get.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what you get. So I also understand that there were times in our history where we were too hard on kids, but we're right now it's gone the other direction.
Yeah. All right, we're going to play a game.
Yeah.
Child abuse or discipline? Not letting your 12-year-old play video games.
Oh, that's like, you should get five gold stars for that one.
That's discipline?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My second son wanted a... My second son wanted a Xbox. So I kept putting challenges his way. You do this, you get the Xbox. Ridiculous challenges. I did not want to get an Xbox in the house. One of the challenges we had, my buddy makes these continuous ropes where you just sit there and you pull the rope. And I said, I do like 1,000 feet in the morning, right? I said, Charlie, you can knock out 25,000 feet. You got 8 hours. If you can get 25,000 feet done in 8 hours, I'll get you the damn Xbox. So he's in the garage and he's doing it. I'm like, there's no way he's going to make it 30 minutes. Like, impossible. And then 40 minutes goes by, and then all his cousins leave for the beach. He's still in the garage. Then I go in there. His hands are bleeding. I got to put lacrosse gloves on him. The damn kid got it done. Now, it was unbelievable. It showed him what his potential. It gave him confidence. Family talks about it. I talk about it, right? Makes him feel good. But it shows you how addictive the games are, that it got a kid to sit there until his hands bleed to try to get the device.
Yeah.
But it also showed you, in the other sense, I like to say, these devices are so powerful, let's use them to our advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I took that moment and that reality and turned it into a superpower for him.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, I always
discipline.
Said, my boys asked. I said, I get the right to choke the shit out of you with the cords if we get it.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. With your 7-year-old, unemotionally smack the shit out of them with a paddle. Unemotionally. Abuse or discipline?
I mean, I don't have the context of why we're smacking the shit out of him, right? If he, if he put a firecracker inside the dog's mouth...
Waffles?
Like, he's getting whacked with the paddle. So I need to know what the context is. But I think it's perfectly okay to spank a kid and let them understand they did something wrong.
Teach your 5-year-old to swim by throwing him in the deep end of the pool.
It's great if you're responsible about it. You know how to swim and... You could save the kid if things go, but I think it's great. Throw him in the pool.
Not letting your 13-year-old have a phone.
My dream. Home run. Do it. Don't give kids phones. We should all buy brick phones for our kids. I'm a failure because we gave the kids the family nice phones.
Okay.
But I say it every day. They should have non-smart phones that weigh 20 pounds. They should carry around payphones. In a backpack, that's what they should do. And they should have to plug them in somewhere and find quarters to dial out.
Make your kid swim across the river in a Class 3 rapids with a 15-pound kettlebell tied to his wrist.
Not a good idea. You've crossed the line. You've crossed the line with that.
Okay. I think you gave me that. There wasn't the rapids, but I asked a couple. Because I do challenges with my sons every birthday.
Yeah.
And you said, so you sent me something about having him swim across the river with the kettlebell. And then what do you recommend for 15-year-old birthday, 15-year-old coming of age? What's some crazy shit I could do with him?
I mean, I'd go walk, run, jog, marathon. Go knock out 26.2 miles. I think it'd be great.
We did 14 miles in a weight vest last year for 14.
Yeah. Throw a weight vest on. Let's get it done.
I like that.
You know? It could be an Ultra Beast, one of the Spartan Ultra Beasts.
Well, there you go. See? And if you had a school curriculum, what would that look like?
First thing would happen, I think about this a lot, when the kids walked in the morning, they'd do burpees before they could come into the building, for sure. There'd be burpees or some form of exercise between classes, for sure. Lots of water. Get rid of all the junk food in the school. I think we'd do more homework in the building. I think kids would be asked to stay later and knock out some stuff. Maybe school would end a little early, but because why do I want? I don't know what the situation is at home for a lot of these kids. So let's make sure they've learned. Maybe they got to rewrite all their notes from 3 to 4 p.m. or 2 to 3 p.m. after school's out. Rewrite all the notes from today. Prove that you gathered that information, and we can move it from short term memory into long term memory. Exercise like hell, eat healthy, and learn a trade. My school, everybody would learn a little electrical, a little welding, a little plumbing. Why not? Certainly learn how to take care of your own finances, all the things that, like, everybody should learn.
And then with you being in the business world now and being such a veteran in it, what do you feel like are skills that are valuable for kids to have.
I mean, it sounds like I'm a Flintstone, which I am, but like exactly like I said, welding, plumbing, electrical, everybody's going the other way. They want to code, they want to program. Who the hell's gonna, who's doing the plumbing?
Yeah.
I read something, we're short 500,000 plumbers in the United States.
I believe that. Welders too, for sure.
Right? Right. So yeah. go learn those skills. AI is not taking that stuff away. I don't think they're gonna have robots putting toilets in anytime soon, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
And then what's the biggest business lesson you've learned in the last year since kind of post after coming out of COVID? What's been
biggest business lesson is everything that can go wrong will go wrong. So practice hard.
That's helpful. We worked to apply that one.
And everything then, everything that, you know, just when you think you're having a good day, boom, smashed in the face.
Obstacle.
Yeah. We have a prayer. We have a Spartan prayer. And it comes from a paratrooper, a French paratrooper that was found in the field in World War II. And he said, God, everybody's asking you for the good stuff. They want, you know, a warm meal. They want to be back with their family, flight home. You probably don't have any of that left. So give me the worst stuff you got, the torment, the toil, the storms. And give me the strength to deal with it. And just promise me you'll keep it coming. Mm-hmm. And so that became our prayer. And so I get a lot of friends during the day that are like, I hope you have a shitty day.
Yeah,
because you know,
it's a great reframe.
Yeah, if you reframe it and you say to yourself, I get to overcome that obstacle. I get to deal with this problem today, as opposed to I have to. So
you can scratch waffles behind the ear before you weave it.
We got waffles.
No, hopes he has a shitty day.
We got waffles.
I'm very big on spirituality and, you know, talking to a higher power and having that behind you, because I think of entrepreneurs as. You guys are the modern-day gladiators when it comes to business, because there's nobody behind you. You have a team, but they just see you guys. So how important is to bring your kids up in kind of knowing who, like, God is, or, you know, prayer and things like that? And then secondly, I want to add to a point that you mentioned about, like, praying that you can get through tough stuff. A lot of people ask for the good things, but I feel like God will give you hard things to see if you can handle the good things.
So it'll
end up
throwing you
a lot of stuff your way.
Look, I think it's great for the kids to think about, believe in a higher power, have some faith. I did Catholic school growing up. I did my 8 years. I wore a uniform. I got beaten by the nuns. It was good. It was great for me. But shamefully, I don't go to church as much as I should. My family, however, my wife is all in. And she brings the kids, and the kids are all in. I don't even know how it happened. Like, I'm scratching my head sometimes. So it's good, because you need those boundaries. You need that understanding as a child. You need to know there are good people in the world. You know, what happened with me was my mom, later in life, she became a yogi. She went to India. And she said, look, Catholicism is great. This was just her thing. But just be a great person. Mm-hmm. It does not matter what book you read. And so she changed my thoughts on it a bit. And so, like, look, Spartan is a church in some ways. And we're just trying to be good people. We're trying to make people healthy. So whether I go to church or not, I hope God will give me some sort of a pass, because we do good things. We change lives, you know?
So question for both of you, and this is another, because again, I think of sports and entrepreneurship, it has a lot of similarities, especially in wrestling. You're not like a number. They're calling you by name, just like they're calling you guys by name. But how do you, like a doctor, who's the doctor's doctor? So who do you guys turn to when everybody's turning to you with issues? And what's the advice you give your kids when they're out on the mat and there? It's just them.
It's funny. I've been introducing the kids to folks to help level them up because when parents talk to kids, even when my parents talk to my kid to me, like, it was white noise. I didn't really want to listen to what the hell did they know. Only later in life you're like, oh, my dad was sharp, my mom, right?
Yeah.
So I have other people out. They say it takes a village. I have other people talking to my kids, teaching them things about business, teaching them things about life, helping them level up. And you don't know what adult is going to click with the kid. Mm-hmm. Not all of them do. But lately I've had some success around that, because I get back channeled from the adults. They're like, oh, no, hey, look, he sent me this text, or she sent, you know.
It's good. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big believer in counsel. And then what you're saying with like what they should do on the mat when they feel alone, I think they shouldn't think.
Yeah.
There's a time to train, and that's when you think. But yeah. when you're actually competing and performing, I think less thinking is better.
Yeah, less decisions, right? Then
you get feedback from that.
Just go.
And then you came down here specifically to Orlando because of...
Mickey Mouse needed a personal trainer.
Mickey Mouse needed a personal trainer.
It was paying big money.
Yeah. Because of a top wrestling program. A theme of this show has been kind of looking at different talent development hotbeds around the world. So I was really intrigued by that. Kind of what led you to that decision? And then how was the rest of your family in terms of the leader saying, hey, this is what we're doing?
Yeah, my wife's pretty easy outside of Waffles. She said, okay, we came down. The school's amazing. The kids are malleable. They went right in. When I walked into the wrestling room, which you're going to walk into, I said, oh, this is out of our league. Kids are not at this level. And then I thought, we're supposed to be here then because mm-hmm. we're supposed to always be out of our league. The girls got into a great soccer program, and it's been great. The kids have been forced to level up, to become better human beings. They're being pushed much harder than I could do myself. And it's great. And it really makes me, you know, if there's 15,000 wrestling programs where you fill in the blank, football, rugby, basketball, there's 15,000 wrestling programs. It's interesting that there's only a handful, and it's the coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's the coach. It makes a difference in any sport, any business. Just, he's a maniac. He cares. He's 24/7. That's it. Maniac cares 24/7.
Yeah. And obviously probably knows what he's talking about in terms of technique and stuff like that.
But you know what? At the end of the day, if you're incredibly fit, if you're switched on as a kid and you've got, you know, the basic skill, you're going to do well.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do well. You could spend a lot of time, I've learned, teaching all this unbelievable technique, but if you're not fit, and you're not switched on, right?
Yeah, most
so
definitely.
You'll see when you come to the club tonight, you'll see his thing is you're not going to get tired before your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's get your opponent tired first, then they make mistakes.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Question about that. So how important is it? So you have the girls in soccer, yep. the guys in wrestling. How important is it to lock them into a sport, or do you think the kid chooses, and then you just nurture them?
That's a question. You know, sorry I keep taking the questions first.
No.
I have met a lot of people. When I was growing up, I met a lot of people, young people, that would say, well, I don't know if I want to do this for work because I haven't found myself yet. I haven't found that thing I want to do. And my belief was just start doing. Pick a path and just start doing. Because when you're doing, you'll bump into something or somebody, and then you'll do something else. And before you know it, you'll get to the place you need to go. But you can't sit on the couch hoping that stuff comes to you. So I have a tough time with having a kid pick their sport. I wouldn't mind, like if I had to do it all over again, the kids are doing gymnastics for those 5, 6, 7 years. Then they're playing a bunch of sports. Even, by the way, it doesn't have to be expensive sport. It could be with you or neighborhood kids, right? And you'll see, by the way, what they're good at. And if they're good at it, decent at it, they're going to like it. It's that simple. No one likes getting their ass kicked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I agree similar in terms of, well, I guess partly. So I agree with the gymnastics part when they're younger, having them do as many different sports as possible. And then I guess overall, I think it's not working in terms of like academics of like just do really well in school because I think kids intuitively understand that potentially is not going to get them, like there's no direct path to get them what they want. So I think that it's really good for them to have something, whether that's a sport, whether that's a musical instrument, whether that's both.
They got to have something. By the way, all the science shows, all the studies show, if they're exercising and doing other things outside of academics, their academics perform better.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then once they show what they're intrinsically motivated to do, then
And you'll see that when you're having them dabble in a bunch of things. But somebody said something really smart to me too, which I didn't know, which was, hey, if you pick four different sports for the kids, your family's going to break.
Yes.
And I didn't consider, oh, that's right, hockey would be over here, soccer's over here, wrestling. Yeah. You can't do it. Something's got to give. So we consolidated for a reason.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's good to have them do a lot of unsupervised stuff where they're playing sports and things like that.
So you both have teenage boys.
Yeah.
Be teenage. And there's a whole thing on social media called the War on Men.
Yeah.
I'm getting real here. Okay.
Yeah.
War
on Men.
Have you heard about this?
I have.
Okay.
Are you knee deep in it every day, I'm sure?
No, I'm not knee deep in it, but you know, I everybody makes a comment in my ecosystem, everybody makes a comment about the wokeness and et cetera. And so
okay.
Look, I always, in every argument, I always try to take the other side against myself. And I say, like, why, like, what would the motivation be? Why would there be a war on men? And I guess, you know, if the four of us that are sitting here were saying to ourselves, man, throughout humanity, we've been killing each other. The cowboys, the Indians, the Americans, the Spanish, we have been killing each other, Russians, Ukrainians, right? And
that's a good point.
And so maybe, I'm speculating here, but maybe we'd say, let's tone down this testosterone a little bit so we stop killing each other. Could be that that's where it came from, but it's got some unintended negative consequences if that were the reason. It's like trying to turn waffles into a waffle. Waffles is not a waffle.
Waffles into a waffle.
He's not a waffle.
I couldn't have picked a better analogy.
he's a badass.
Yeah.
Right? He's a badass. He's a Staffordshire Terrier. Everybody knows who he is when he walks in. He's not a waffle.
So how do you prepare the boys for that with everything on like social media and like the school system? And
so I don't even really touch that, but I would say like I focus on leadership. So like the question then, like with what you've already talked about in terms of moving your family here, and of course it's a partnership with your wife. I'm sure there's been stuff in the past of you kind of taking the role in the leader of the family. Nothing wrong with the female doing that, right? But it seems like it's more common for men, or is that out of touch? My point is, as long as someone, I think there needs to be more people doing that, who are good at what they do, who have conviction with what they're
they're leading, and then let society just do what it's going to do, because it's always a race to the bottom. People don't speak up. That's how World War II happened, right? They just don't speak up, even though they see in front of their eyes people are doing bad things. They don't take action. So you're saying, take a stand. Take the right stand, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dig in.
Yeah, men or women, just in terms of leadership. So that when you say war on men, like I think part of the testosterone thing and all that, it leads, of course, more war and things, but also getting shit done.
Yeah.
Next
question. That leads me into, because there's a lot of kind of pushing or an agenda happening, I feel like, personally, with kind of getting the testosterone down, like, you know, maybe people are being too aggressive. But what's a good kind of aggressive? And I'm sure you guys have heard people call you crazy, like you're doing too much, you know, you're pushing too hard. You know, what would you say to that in your, like...
Well, a good kind of aggressive is the kind that doesn't just do what the masses do, that doesn't just follow the sheep, that's willing to take a stand. There's a great story in Tampa that I've gotten to know over the last few years, where a police officer was off duty. There was a perpetrator driving in the wrong direction on a highway at full speed. He was a civilian, the police officer. He had dressed down, he already done for the day, had a split second to decide, I gotta smash into this guy, because if I don't, he's gonna cause a major accident on the highway.
That's wild.
And he hit the car, they both died.
Okay.
But that is a good form of aggression, right? He took a stand. And so you know, we could all just kind of mosey along and end up in a really mushy place where we're all overweight and drunk, and or some people could have a good form and take a stand, mm-hmm. and go against the masses, mm-hmm. and you know, in some ways, like my mom did it. My mom in the 1970s, everybody was smoking. There was no yoga back then. Everybody was eating shitty food, TV dinners. And she took a stand. She took a stand for the family, right? She went to India. She learned long distance running, cold showers, don't put all these chemicals on, don't do microwaves, all this wacky stuff in the 19th. The whole world was against, including me, her kids, everybody was against her. But she took a stand. And that was a good kind of aggressive.
Yeah, you talk about that in the book. You weren't like a huge proponent of like the healthy yogi lifestyle. And then
it was weird. I had monks in the living room chanting. I wanted like an eggplant parm hero. I didn't want to, like, none of it made sense.
What changed over time?
Well, then later in life, yeah, you're right. Later in life, I'm on a trading desk on Wall Street and not feeling so good and saying, oh, maybe she had it right. She had it right.
And so a lot of kids are going to, I think at a certain age, I think it starts at 11, where kids start to think their parents are idiots and that they know better. And I think there's a delicate dance between like giving them independence and letting them know who's the authority. What does that dance, like the optimal dance look like, you know?
I think that's not all parents, not all kids think their parents are idiots.
Okay. Mine do.
Do they? I don't believe that. I don't believe that. It's common, but I don't think it's everybody. I don't believe that.
Okay.
Well, I didn't think my parents were idiots. I think we, as parents, say that. They just don't listen.
Yeah, the white noise.
It's white noise.
Yeah.
So I don't, you're right. I mean, I didn't think my mom or dad were idiots. I just thought, like, I already know. I don't need it.
Yeah. So what do you do with your kids? Like, in the case that they're like, hey, I have Google.
Yeah, I get it a lot. And so that's why I've been infusing, unsuspectingly, these other individuals into mm-hmm. their lives. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's the way to do it. And then also, I think it's the parents got to take some responsibility to have some skills to be able to navigate, to meet the kid where they are, and then communicate in a language where you're still leading, getting them to do what you want without accommodating.
So, last question while we're on.
It's like saying all kids are bad when they're teenagers. I don't believe that. It's bullshit.
You'll see. You'll get a taste. We got a head soon here to wrestling, and you'll see what's going on there.
But last question while we're on health. So, I've noticed a lot of entrepreneurs who want to burn the candle at both ends. And you guys look incredibly good for your age, like physically fit. And
for 123, I'm doing good.
You know, and I see a lot of these guys are overweight, like they're balding, it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, drop some gems, you know, what does it take to like maintain your family, your business, and then your own health?
I'm definitely over-optimized. Me personally, I'm over-optimized on business for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm under-optimized in family, and I'm under-optimized in my own health and wellness. But that said, I'm probably in the 1 percentile globally where I'm running a business, I'm still working out every single day, I'm drinking more water, I'm trying to eat more salad. Like, I'm doing the right things. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I never did, I don't take drugs, right? Like, so.
Is there a mental dialogue that happens? Is there a voice that ever kind of creeps in, and what do you tell that voice?
What I do, if anybody out there is listening or watching and you don't understand how to do it, what I do is I say what I just said as publicly as often as I can. And so in the morning when I don't feel like doing it, just like every other human being, I say I'm a fraud.
Mm.
I got to do it. I always talk about it. And you could, you know, there was a moment in time where my grandfather was talking to my dad. I was probably 12 or 13 years old. My grandfather said, he's a hard worker, huh? It was just loud enough for me to hear it. At that moment, I became a hard worker. Mm-hmm. So not only did it happen from an outside person, I think you could do it to yourself. You can convince yourself who you are. And so you just got to say it over and over. If you keep saying, I overeat, guess what's going to happen? You overeat. If you keep saying, I don't overeat, you will stop overeating.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom used to say stuff like that, and I thought she was a wacko, because how could words in the universe actually become something? That's how they become something. I said 8-9 years ago, we're going to be an Olympic sport. I had no fucking idea how we'd become. I've never created an Olympic sport before. I've never even been to the Olympics. Like, but I said it over and over and over. We became an Olympic sport.
Mm.
So
that happened.
It happened.
That's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that is. And I remember when you first started saying
it. Yeah, I said it thousands of times. I don't know.
I mean, they got some other crazy shit. Why can't they have obstacle course
racing? Yeah, exactly. In there? Yeah, and it happened.
That's a bliss.
That Olympic ping pong. And
well, ping pong's legit. I mean,
I think the key is the actions match everything he was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would answer that and just say, if you look at the best athletes in the world, they know how to turn their energy on when it's needed, and they know how to recover. So you can work very hard. That's like, I feel like hard work, like, it's not that much of a skill that, like, puts you, that just gets you in the game. Yeah. So then, like, what happens when you get from there? And then to be able to find time to recover physically and mentally throughout the day, you're going to set yourself up to be healthier, and you're going to set yourself up to do your job better. I mean, that's all burnout is. It's just not enough recovery. So, yeah.
Thus, we come all the way back. That's why everybody needs a waffles.
Everyone needs a waffles.